Hello, everyone, and welcome to another week of Trad Tasman Talk. It is 6 p.m. here in Melbourne on Friday, the 17th of April, 2020. It's the continuing lockdown series of episodes, I think we can call it.
The never-ending lockdown. Indeed. 8 p.m. here in Auckland. Good to see you all again. Thank you for tuning in. My goal is to not talk too much about coronavirus today, but, you know, basically everything is tainted. Everything is tainted with the lockdown, and so there's no real way out of it.
Yeah, some people, they've lost track of the time or the day, we know, because, I definitely know because I've got a different show broadcasting every night. I'm not sure what it's like for you.
It's for me with work, it's the case where, you know, today it was Friday, and basically I was like, oh, wow, it's the end of the week already, and, you know, crunch time, try and get more things done, everyone else in a similar position. So it's definitely the case where people are losing track of time. And, yeah, it's week three here of our lockdown, going into week four of the official lockdown, and then we have guaranteed a two-week extension on level three, which is possibly future Prime Minister in waiting, Judith Collins, has said, is like level four, but with KFC.
Yeah, we can still get KFC in Australia. It's an essential business. I know that
it's not essential in New Zealand yet. So there you go.
There have been
Easter Bunny.
Yeah, video tutorials online and also on various food blogs about how to make your own KFC, but we do know that that's one of the most heavily guarded secrets, the 11 herbs and spices. We can still get our 9 pieces for $9.95 on Cheap Tuesday and $2 large chips as well. That's every day. So,
oh, it's very important that the masses can still get all of their essential items that are not so important.
Though, can you get your own meat grinder to process mince and beef to make your own McDonald's patties?
I'm afraid that probably selling meat grinders is non-essential. So if you manage to get mince, you could try and make some meat patties here. But you could actually buy them from the supermarkets. And the subject of KFC has reminded me that Amy went to the supermarket today, and she said they were selling fried chicken at the supermarket in the deli. So basically replaced the deli with like a fake KFC outlet, and there were like lines of people at the supermarket getting their fake KFC. That's how desperate, that's how terribly the situation has deteriorated here in New Zealand.
Well, Jacinta, no wonder they love her so much, the lockdown lovies. Just look at all the economic destruction she is continuing to cause.
Yeah, absolutely. I see a question in the chat already. Is KFC sponsoring the show? The answer is actually yes. Our previous sponsor was Burger King, but they went bankrupt last week. So, you know, due to the lockdown, so we had to replace them with KFC. They may survive for one more week before they can start making their sweet cash again.
Say hello, everyone, in the YouTube live chat. We're still just on the Unshackled's YouTube channel with the live feed, which means that you can also send a super chat directly through Google if you can stomach that by just pressing the dollar button and writing the message of your choice, and we'll read it out. I think if KFC was going to sponsor any of our shows, it would be the Dusty Bogan, given that his Cheap Tuesday show is named after KFC's Cheap Tuesday.
But in a serious moment here, we don't actually have sponsors, but you can send a super chat to Tim, and if you'd like your comments read out or your questions answered, super chats are welcomed. We'll be taken through the show, and especially because we don't want to talk about the coronavirus situation the whole time, it will be good to get some things to discuss that are not directly related to that. We hopefully do have a few items. So we're going to go through the latest news that is coronavirus related as quickly as we can and try and get onto the slim pickings that we have that could take our mind away from the ongoing the never ending virus the virus of everything to do with communism and we talked last week about the fallout from various conspiracies get discussed and like basically we're at the point where the media are at press conferences asking about 5G conspiracy theories because they have nothing else left to talk about anymore. So yeah, that's how far we've fallen.
Now political leaders are talking about the bioweapons facility in Wuhan testing on. Yeah. On bats, and I did like that InfoWars last night. I'll include a link to it on the show notes page. They compiled a list of all the mainstream media outlets that a couple of months back said that the Wuhan bioweapon facility was all fake news, including Snopes. They debunked it, said, "Oh, this is a crazy conspiracy theory."
And so, like I said, some of the subjects we've talked about months ago, like there's no need to talk about the bioweapons lab because we talked about, well, it's not, it wasn't a bioweapon, just a biolab. The bioweapon thing is a nice a nice little, sort of the bells and whistles that people add on to get extra clicks. But it is just a regular high-level biolab in Wuhan. And we talked about that either back in January or early February. I can't remember what show it was. And, we're too far ahead of the news cycle. So we got to slow down and let it catch up to us.
Somebody mentioned in the chat Coca-Cola has been a sponsor. Yeah, because I tend to drink a Coke during the show, Coke Zero, just because it sort of gives me a bit of a buzz, especially during a longer show. Though it has been brought to my attention in the past that Coca-Cola have played ads before Unshackled videos on YouTube.
I know. Tim has turned into a corporate chill.
Or Coca-Cola's become racist.
That's far more likely. Far more likely. So in terms of numbers, everyone will have been following the coronavirus numbers. They're going down here in New Zealand. The number of deaths has been slowly climbing, all of them above 70. I believe 7 out of 11 deaths that we've had in New Zealand have been from a dementia ward in a retirement village. So there's a lot of fear about if you go outside and catch the virus. There's no evidence here in New Zealand that anybody who is under the age of 70 has been particularly harmed by this, and yet everybody is locked into their homes. People's livelihoods are being ruined. You don't have a choice. You want to take the so-called risk to go out and do your job. Well, too bad, you can't.
Well, a lot less people would die all the time if we were under constant lockdown and house arrest. This is how they justified, this is years back now, the Sydney lockout laws in King's Cross. They're like, look, alcohol fuel violence has ended in King's Cross. Yeah, because you shut the whole district down. So if nobody is going out, then nothing can happen on the street. But this is obviously... This is a lockout, a much more scale.
And that's exactly it. This is for your safety. Well, good, stay in bed all day and you'll be safe. No risk if you don't get out of bed in the morning. And that's the way life is, and the entire point of freedom and liberties are that people get to evaluate these risks. People get to be responsible, or if people are irresponsible, perhaps they'll suffer the consequences. Mm-hmm. And now instead we are in a situation where people are forced to be safe, supposedly. And what we've seen in a number of these countries, something I've mentioned before, is the death tolls have actually gone up well beyond the coronavirus deaths on, say, last year. So a lot of people are dying of other things that are lockdown related.
Elective surgeries that have been suspended, some of those are chemotherapy for cancer patients. They're deemed non-essential.
Exactly. Yeah. yeah, if they're not, if they haven't been deemed essential or urgent, then they get delayed. But if you've got cancer and this, you know, a week or two can make all the difference. That's the difference between life and death for a lot of people. If you have widespread economic damage, that is extremely harmful to the public health as well, because, you know, if you pick a third world country with a useless economy, with a really low GDP, really low standards of living, there are a lot more people who die of just about every disease. Why? Because of their low socioeconomic statuses, and that's incredibly dangerous. And if you are forcing tens of thousands or possibly hundreds of thousands of people, and you're locking them into a lower socioeconomic status, then what you're doing is creating a much higher mortality rate in the future. And as I've said, in many countries, that's already happening. Simply after a few weeks, in the coming years, we will see far more losses, far more loss of life due to the lockdown. Right? We can already say for sure that the cure has been worse than the disease. There are very, very few people who are going to be doubting that in the coming months.
Yeah, and Australia, the fever that most people are feeling at the moment is cabin fever. We have seen the curve not just flatten, but dip. We're getting around about 10 to 20 new cases every day. There are a few more deaths today. It had been stagnant at 63 at the beginning of the week. It's gone up to 65 now. And so now everyone is rightfully asking the question, come on now. We've achieved what you said, which is to flatten the curve, or now it's
nobody's talking about that anymore. Yeah. Nobody's talking about that anymore.
Give us a exit strategy. Yeah. And Scott Morrison, after the latest National Cabinet meeting, he talked about that they may look at relaxing the restrictions in May. I call it May Day liberation, and that there's three criteria that need to be reached, and that's more widespread testing, because, well, we already are a world leader in testing.
Exactly.
Australia, we've conducted 384,000 tests in Australia, and it's the positive rate, it continues to dip below 2%. He's also said that tracing capability, that they want, Morrison has said that making sure we have an even greater tracing capability that we have now. And they've talked about this app that you can download. And so if you get coronavirus, you can trace who you've been in contact with. Well, yeah. the government or whoever they've employed to run the app will be able to track that. And Scott Morrison said, oh, for now it'll be voluntary, but he sort of left it open for it to be, this app will have to be on our phone. What if we decide we don't want a phone anymore?
For all these people talking about microchips now, it's just your phones, man.
Yeah.
they'll glue a phone to your hand.
they're basically the message is stay in your pod, eat your bugs, download the app, watch your porn, just be a continued locked up slave.
Exactly, the effects here in New Zealand, there's been like no talk of what are the criteria that need to be met before we move out. It seems almost arbitrary that now that on the 23rd we're moving into the so-called level three, where you get to expand your bubbles, which is a term that's been coined here in New Zealand. I'm not sure if it's in use in Australia. I know that in the rest of the world they don't talk about it like that. One of Jacinda's very clever inventions. So you get to expand your bubbles a little bit more because clearly people are going to go nuts in the next week. So now it's a case of, okay, well, you can go and see your brother or sister, you can go and see your mother or father. You can, you get little crumbs so that everyone sort of will comply for a few more weeks, and then who knows where we'll go. New Zealand is still on the route of elimination. And so we'll see how that goes. We only had two confirmed cases today. They managed to scrounge together eight with six possible ones. Mm-hmm. So they're really running out of confirmed cases. And you were talking about testing as being a high criteria in Australia. Yesterday is the day that we started targeted testing. So they were only testing people who showed symptoms until yesterday. Yesterday is the only time they actually started testing for asymptomatic cases, because we've run out of active cases, actual active cases to test.
The third criteria is the capability for local responses, is that if there's a cluster outbreak, that they can lock a community down like they have in northwestern Tasmania, where they've locked down two hospitals and the town of Burnie because there's been outbreaks at those hospitals. 5,000 people are in lockdown. The army has been called in.
Nice. And we haven't been privileged enough to have the army called in yet here.
Although Victoria has managed to number one in the police force issuing fines and for breaching
the
essential travel, and we're also home to the most ridiculous fines that have been withdrawn. There was a couple, they lived in the Latrobe Valley. They were, the police turned up to them door, presented them with a fine because they'd uploaded photos of a recent trip to Lake's Entrance, but they were old photographs. The time that they went there was the last year.
Yeah.
So there was a snitch on their Facebook account, and police just took the snitch's word for it that, oh, if they uploaded it recently, then it must have happened recently. And when they went to complain to police, they said, oh, just don't upload anything onto Facebook.
Yeah, that's the answer, right? But you know, see, it's the visits that people get here in New Zealand for the Facebook posts continue. I just saw one today of a lady who looked more sort of left-leaning, sort of anarchist, sort of one of the more left-leaning anarchists, and she got a visit from the police because of her Facebook posts. You know, it's just like it goes on and on and on here, and it can only get worse. The police, we already had the case that you had in Australia, the police basically being there at the beaches and turning people away for trying to go to the beach, and supposedly that's coming to an end in a week or so. In a week you'll be allowed to go to the beach, but as long as you don't go too far to a beach that's too far away, then the police, you know, may track you with their drones or you know, the app on your phone, and you know, do their thing.
There was a good Twitter post before the lockdown. People said, "I'd never turn in Anne Frank after the lockdown's been implemented." Hello, yes, there's somebody out on their front lawn. They look like that they could be breaching social distancing with their breath traveling over to my property, which sort of shows that sort of virtue signaling thing. Yeah, I'd be the sort of noble freedom crusader. No, you'd be the snitch.
No, exactly. Yeah, they would be. And it's basically the comparison is not quite there, but it's the same kind of arguments that are always used, that are always present, is, oh, this is for your safety. The people doing this are dangerous. They will hurt the public health, whatever. Like, it doesn't need to be true. It's the same argument. It's the easiest argument, right? The easiest argument is, oh, these people are dangerous. This is dangerous. These people are doing dangerous things. Well, these people are dangerous. And, you know, if you turn them in, then you'll get to go back to normal soon. Because that's basically the situation we're in, right? Is if you snitch on enough people, then we can come out of lockdown earlier. And if you don't snitch on enough people, then it might get worse. Mm-hmm. And so then you may be locked down longer. And so it becomes it's an appeal to people's inner, to people's basest feelings, to their the selfishness, and that's what they're targeting and asking people to snitch that out.
We've got a couple of super chats here. First one is from Senator Slayer for $2. Thank you. I legit am not allowed to super chat ch expletive or w expletive, which they sound like some sort of racial nickname. And we have,
and I can read out the other one because it's a New Zealand one. A New Zealand one from Origin, and he says, for $5 New Zealand, he says, Tim, you need to have a sip of water. It looks like you have a dry mouth.
I always get dry not necessarily dry mouth, but
your
dry
Marco
lips.
Rubio moment. I'll take a Marco Rubio moment as well.
Yeah, because I always have to put on this pawpaw cream here. This is not a sponsor for Lucas pawpaw.
You still
ointment.
Have it after you were here like three years ago, and with the pawpaw cream, I remember that.
There was actually at the supermarkets for about 4 or 5 days a shortage of this particular ointment, and so I was sort of like going around. There's nothing left. My lips are basically going to dry and crack and fall off.
The interesting thing with the food, sort of the food shortages here, is because everyone here will be familiar with the iPencil book or movie or documentary, whichever one. iPencil, the story of how it's impossible for one man to make a pencil and to, you know, from scratch with no other materials, because you basically need an insanely complicated supply chain to create a pencil. And we started getting shortages of certain things on the shelves in New Zealand, not because the goods themselves were running out, but because the command and control system put in place by Jacinda didn't take into account that maybe, like, for instance, you would need ink to be able to print the labels to stick on the goods so that they could be put on shelves, or that they didn't think that they needed, you know, the glue or the the cardboard or all of these other little things. Even ones that I haven't thought of now, because once you get down to it, then you need more things to create the things, you know, and the supply chain goes on and on and on, so for instance, flour became a real problem because we didn't have enough bags to put the flour into, and so slowly it worked. Slowly things have been resolved now. We had trouble getting eggs at one point, which didn't have any trouble with that today. Amy might remember in the chat what was difficult to get or what was missing. I think we're still fairly low on like flour and pasta. I think that's still a difficult one, at least where I am.
That's the probably the last remaining things that there's shortage of at our supermarket, and that there's quantity purchase restrictions. I checked the updated restrictions. It's basically still, I mean, we are going to have an abundance of toilet paper soon, but they've still got the restriction, one per customer of toilet paper, paper towels, tissues, baby wipes. There's still still one for flour, rice, and pasta, two for baked beans and tinned spaghetti, and also for pasta sauce. The tinned vegetables now and tinned fruit, you're allowed as much as you want. Same with the long life milk. So there's been, we're nearly out of it yet. And I know at my local supermarket, they've got heaps of toilet paper.
And what happens as well is people start to notice some things are running low, and then, ooh, I should buy an extra one of those. And on it goes, it never ends. I'm going to let you read out the super chat, by the way.
From
it's bothering me too much.
$2 Australian, thank you. No, your mouth is too wet. No, it's not. I mean, I've got the probably HD feed right in front of me. I don't see anything wet about it.
We have some hand pump soap. There we go. So people are still taking the advice to wash their hands too much. All the people that weren't washing their hands before are suddenly washing their hands, and so we may be having a permanent shortage of soap. That one may be impossible to rectify until you know, a couple of years after the virus is gone and everybody stops washing their hands again.
There's still a few restrictions on cleaning and hand products. But the only real shortage we have in that regard is hand sanitizer itself. But I've always had problems with eczema. So the hand sanitizer, when I use it, my hands either turn red or basically dry up again. As you can tell, my skin gets dry and irritated very easily. And so I'm having to use lots of moisturizer as well.
Yeah, we're destroying the chat now. I can see things are going crazy, and I've got a new story. I'll move on to a new story that people will enjoy, which is that two people have actually taken a court case against Jacinda Ardern, and I kind of hinted at this last week, where I said that the lockdown probably not necessarily that has a legal justification. We still have the issue now where Crown Law won't reveal their legal counsel, or the government won't reveal the legal counsel they got from Crown Law to implement the lockdown. So it's probably not, they probably don't really have the constitutional authority to do what they've done. But that will the courts won't deal with that until after it's over. So you don't have to worry about that. They'll cover for this as best as they can. So two men went to court to say, oh, this is actually detention. So they're being illegally detained by Jacinda Ardern. The legal counsel for Jacinda Ardern says the lockdown doesn't go far enough to be considered a detention. So in case people are worried that you're being confined to your house, don't worry. Apparently you're not in detention, according to the Prime Minister's legal defense. And the men specifically meant, and I'll just give you some quotes here. So you see, one of the men says, it's not a pandemic, it's a panic-demic, and she's running the show. She has a cup of tea with Stephen Tindall, and they both decide to ruin. The New Zealand economy and take away my rights. He says the lockdown amounted to an imposition of authoritarian rule, the death toll at the time was at 9 when they made this case. So he cited a quote attributed to Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin: "One death is a tragedy. A million deaths is a statistic." And he says 9 doesn't even make a statistic, and so on. He challenged the initial predictions. Like, there was a prediction that 80,000 New Zealanders would die.
Yeah, and which is the obviously thing, total they bogus. Can say bogus after the fact. We had our Fairfax papers say that 150,000 to 200,000 Australians could die, and we've only had 65 deaths. They can say, look, because this is the thing with it.
We saved 60,000 people, Tim. We did it. We saved 60,000 people.
We all know from the climate change predictions just how unreliable modeling and putting things through a computer generated scenario is.
I think these guys at least have some good arguments, and but again, what I see happening here, the courts simply sit on this until it's over, and then it doesn't matter anymore, right? And so even if it's ruled that it was too much, the judges won't offer any compensation, because they simply they're simply carrying water and giving a good bit of backing to the government, regardless of whether they have any legal basis to do it or not.
And good luck suing the government for taking away your rights, and also good luck suing communist governments.
Exactly. So we'll see. Maybe more of this will happen now, especially since we're continuing level 3. Who knows how this will go? So there's some good stuff in here. And we mentioned already. They're finally talking about the biolab. We already talked about this. New Zealand has finally had to admit they're doing trials of this chloroquine drug that Trump touted, which the media asked the chief medical officer Ashley Bloomfield about a couple of days ago. Oh no, it's unproven. There's no
evidence. Which
doesn't
mean that it's bad.
Blah blah blah. And then 2 days later, they're using the drug here in the hospitals. Thank you, President Trump, for doing that.
We've got a few more super chats here. We should go through them now. Senator Slayer sent through another $2. He also messaged me privately to say that the words he couldn't say was China and who, which is the bleep asterisks that he used to censor those words. The number of letters don't match up with.
Yeah,
what he claims there. So he said Did I see a copy of Mein Kampf behind you, Tim? Yeah, because you can see my bookshelf there. I suppose if you want to zoom in, or maybe some Antifa person who is watching, maybe they can do a zoom in thing and
Yes.
study what sort of dissident literature I'm reading. So yeah, I'm not hiding what's on my bookshelf, so you can zoom in and find out for yourself. And we've
The only
also
book, yeah, this is the dissident literature that I've got on my desk at the moment. Just something I was
One
looking at the other day.
Nation.
I know this is the one of the biggest hate speech books in New Zealand,
Unless you're
actually.
talking about communism in One Nation, because that was Joseph Stalin's
One
policy.
global government. It's okay, guys. Talking about one global nation, it's fine.
Which Jacinta Ardern, they all think that she should be the leader of. Oh, if we. If the globalists like Henry Kissinger and Tony Blair do succeed in implementing a one world government, we want Jacinta Ardern to. Could she lock down
You
7
can take
billion
her.
people?
Don't make me. Well, she still talks to everybody like children when she does her press conferences. I actually hadn't listened to any live. I just heard people say it. And Amy insisted on watching one of them yesterday. She was very furious and quite agitated by it after watching Jacinda speak for about 10 minutes. I did advise her against it, but she didn't listen to me. So lesson learned, I suppose. But yeah, she basically just talked to everyone like a bunch of school children, and that's the reality of the situation. All right, I'll take the next super chat here from Origin again before we move on. He said, "Hey Tim, I know it was covered last week, but what are your thoughts on the Bolt Cardinal Pell interview?" And you probably did a show on that or have written some stuff
Yeah,
about that, but I think it's a good one. You can talk. You can answer this now before we move into the next topic. I think it's good.
and so you can watch my Last Wills Front episode 63. I interviewed John Macaulay, who is actually a friend of the Cardinal, and it was on a Wednesday, the night after the interview aired on the Tuesday. You can watch that episode for full analysis. But to summarize my thoughts, I think that Pell came across with much more humility and displayed much more raw emotion than I think we've ever seen from him, because I've repeatedly said he always has come across as a cold and uncaring person, and that's why he's been so easy to demonize. So I think that was good that he showed that emotion there. And Bolt did ask him the curly questions.
We don't have Bolt or anybody quite like him here in New Zealand, but I do believe he's considered in Australia, at least by the reasonable people, to be a very good interviewer. So.
Have any another thing that the lockdown lovies they get triggered by every time a member of the free market think tank, the Institute of Public Affairs, talks about the economic and mental health impacts of the lockdown? I know that you have a few free market organizations in New Zealand. Is there sort of any lockdown lovies that are getting triggered by any liberationists?
Every time we have very few liberationists, but the one that we do have are from interesting quarters, like former MP Peter Dunn, who's sort of known to be slightly leftish. He's like the guy with the bow tie, you'll remember him. He was the one man party of United Future for many years. He actually said that we need to get out of this Orwellian nightmare that we're in, and that this is basically 1984 happening right now, and that the restrictions of people's freedoms is not actually a good thing. Basically safety above all else is not something he supports, and he's not usually someone you'd pick for a right wing free marketeer. The other sort of taxpayers union and other free market groups that we've had have not necessarily come out swinging, except for a couple of specific cases where they've wanted some niche little things that don't really matter in the great scheme of things. We have had former finance ministers talk about how this will this will completely ruin the economy and, you know, cost more lives in the long run. So, but there haven't been any big calls to just say, look, end the lockdown now. I could mention the New Conservative Party, of course. New Conservative leader Leighton Bacon has basically said as well, you know, we need to open up this, that, and the other thing. He's got a very good plan. He's the only one who's really come out to say, in politics anyway, to say end the lockdown. And I actually, we did go live when they were doing a live stream. So I was competing with my own party leader and deputy leader for views. So since our views have gone up now, I suspect they may have finished. But in the comments section, you always get the people, and it's been announced that schools will reopen next week, probably voluntarily, like if you want to go back to school. And people are complaining, saying, oh, I'm a teacher and I have to go back and it's not safe and it's really dangerous. I want to keep my own children at home, and I'll have to go. And it's kind of the point, right? If you open up the schools, what's the point of a lockdown? Which becomes a bit of a farce, where everybody's interacting with each other in their workplaces and in their schools and so on. So you've got these people who are complaining about this. But again, nobody under the age of 70 has died of this in New Zealand. Well, you can't get around that.
We've had a few in their 60s die from the coronavirus.
Mm-hmm. So, and it's certainly possible for we've seen it in other countries. It's very, very rare, and it can happen with any disease, you know. And again, if you're worried about, you know, dying of or getting seriously injured from coronavirus because you're working at a school or anywhere else, you're far more likely to be killed in a car crash or be struck by lightning or whatever. There's 100 other things. You might trip and fall down the stairs and break your neck on the way to work.
Which is why you should stay at home all the time.
Which is why you should stay at home. Don't get out of bed. You'll be safe. Mm. Don't get out of bed. It's a dangerous world out there. Mm. So I can take the next. I mean, there was a super chat.
There's a couple now.
I see. Or Sam B, €3.50. So we have a European Union globalist in the chat here. He said, down with Jacinda. Oh, it turns out he's not a European Union globalist.
Well, I think he might be German or French or...
Yeah. He says, how do we support this case? Talking about the court case we were talking about earlier, people trying to sue Jacinda for illegally detaining them. They've got name suppression. They're doing this privately. I suspect they've got their own money. I'm afraid there's no direct way to support their case. So that's just the way it is. And I suspect, the courts will drag this out to the point where it will no longer matter. So next one.
You read it out.
I've got to take that. Oh, from Sandra Slayer, another $2. People are sick in New Zealand because of horse face. I've got no idea who he's talking about there. Must be an Australian thing.
Yeah, I mean, which politician is often said that they look like a horse?
I wouldn't know. These are not the kinds of things that I engage in.
Brucey Boy said, you're laughing, aren't you? A dude in his 40s died overnight. I'll check that. It's definitely been the case. I know that over in Europe and North America, there's been those in their 20s and 30s who've been dying. But our youth in Australia and in New Zealand must be made of tougher things.
They probably drink more alcohol. Apparently, alcohol is a good barrier against coronavirus. So,
why we've got our liquor stores open in Australia. Essential,
yeah, exactly. Essential. It turns out liquor is truly essential, and everyone just needs to binge drink to stay safe from coronavirus. Stay at home and binge drink. That's where it is. So, we did have, on the subject of essential stuff and what's going on in Australia and New Zealand, we have had a story or a call recently, which came to both our attention here because it was talking about the Trans Tasman show, which is what this show used to be called, talking about the Trans Tasman bubble, and it was Winston Peters?
Yeah, your Deputy Prime Minister.
So Deputy Prime Minister Winston Peters, I'll give this quote from him. He said, our figures with Australia, it's almost like we've got a Trans Tasman bubble between our two countries. If the figures keep going that way, this is a serious possibility, he said, referring to opening up borders. And we talked about that last week. Again, we're ahead of the news by weeks, if not months, almost every single time, where And Jacinda Ardern here mentioned talking had she been in discussions with Singapore. So again, it seems likely that while the world will stay shut down, Australia, New Zealand, some of the Pacific nations, Southeast Asia, may open up trade and travel, you know, sooner than everywhere else.
Mm. So it's ABC, anyone but China.
Yeah, exactly.
Because did you hear today that they've suddenly added 1,500 extra deaths to their national deaths from coronavirus? Oh, we discovered that 1,500 more people in Wuhan died from the coronavirus.
We went through and we crowbarred open all these apartments that we sealed shut, and we found 1,500 bodies inside. That's it, yeah.
Or did they just, I don't know, they decided that they knew that people thought their figures was dodgy, so they just dug up one of the mass graves that they'd used and like
counted the bodies again. It's the case where the truth will likely not be known for many, many years, and it's going to be interesting, I think, to see I suspect the earlier accusations or the earlier allegations about the truth will probably turn out to be far more right as time goes on.
Because people there's who are that quick... intelligence intercept that 21 million phones in China went offline.
Yeah. Yeah, so you know, that's China. If you either people were deciding to disappear because they were worried about the government, or you know, a lot of political dissidents suddenly vanished, and in a country of a couple of billion people, you're not really going to miss you know, what's a few million between friends.
We've got another super chat from Port Film Co-op, $2 Australian. Thank you, Tim. Your mouth moisturizer is now at the right. All right, let me have a look at this. I think it's something that I'm conscious of, but I will call out the false accusations when they're in the chat, even if they are super chats.
And we can move on to some media items now. I have to read out the next super chat here from Oregon again, $2 New Zealand. He says coronavirus equals death race 2020. Mm.
Economic death race 2020.
We've seen the media in New Zealand lose the plot completely. I talked a bit about, I mentioned before, the Trump chloroquine drug, where they finally had to admit they needed it. It's funny, I just clicked through to the New Zealand Herald on this link to read it out, and I see the announcement breaking news here. It says China revises Wuhan coronavirus death toll by 50%. So there you go. The lockdown lovies. The Americans, they claim that Americans lose it over Jacinda Ardern's light-hearted media moment. And like a dozen people on Twitter, they make this entire article about a dozen people on Twitter being excited that Jacinda asked someone, you know, told someone to, they could, a journalist, they could ask the question, and he said, "Oh, sorry, I forgot. It doesn't matter." And she said, "Ah, ha ha, we'll come back to you, no problem. I do worry about your sleep at the moment, though, Jason." So the media, they were so excited because in America they get wrecked by Trump every single day. Like, they have to come to his press conferences, and then he'll like play videos of them lying and spreading fake news, and he'll rip them to shreds. And they're so worried that when they've got to go there, they're like, "Oh, wow, if only we could have Jacinda be the president of the United States, and we could have Jacinda, and she'd call us by our first names, and she'd say that she's worried about us, and this will make us feel so good."
Well,
and that's the state of the media at the moment.
Yeah, we had our former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull used to call one of his favourite journalists, The Guardian's Catherine Murphy, by a nickname, Murfaroo. Well, it turns out in Malcolm Turnbull's soon-to-be-released memoirs, he brokered the financing to launch The Guardian Australia, one of the most left-wing publications in Australia, if not the world, that has open communists and Antifa writing for them. Not only did he broker the financing, Graham Wood, he tipped in the $20 million is the the reported figure to bankroll the Guardian Australia, Graeme Wood is, he runs What If online travel booking. He's the Greens' biggest donor. And at the time, Malcolm Turnbull was the shadow communications minister in the Liberal Party. And he also handpicked Lenore Taylor to be the editor of The Guardian and Catherine Murphy Murfaru to be the political editor. And it's just come out now, 8 years later.
Yeah, what? Surprise! Surprise! And he, I mean, was he sort of considered to be reasonably right-wing or centrist? I'm not overly... I know that he didn't last very long. It's all that we know about your prime ministers here in New Zealand.
Oh, he lasted just shy of 3 years, which is not bad.
That's a pretty good time. That's almost a record in Australia, yeah.
Yeah, so he was brought down in August 2018. That's when Scott Morrison, he was the compromise candidate. He ran against Peter Dutton, the Home Affairs Minister. And in that book, he's also given ScoMo, Peter Dutton and Matthias Cormann all a spray, trying to plant the seeds of distrust between the three, saying, oh, they said all this behind your back and this is what they really think of you.
Yeah.
Trying to poison the well, since they're all getting along well now, Morrison, Dutton and Cormann. Yeah. And yeah, he just comes across in the book. He's had to cancel his book tour because of the coronavirus. Yeah, it just comes across as salty as fuck.
It's the way that the media, the politicians, the media, and the millionaire elites, they all get on together, and there's no left, right, and center between them. They're all on the same, they're all on the same team, and it's what the sort of nationalist populist YouTubers have been saying for years now, is that it's not left and right anymore. It's nationalists versus globalists, and all of the globalists are on the same team. And I think Malcolm Turnbull and the Guardian and the little deals they're running, just one more little bit of evidence, not that you need it anymore.
Lenore Taylor, she put out an op-ed when this all came out, saying that, oh yes, we said thanks to Malcolm for getting us these plum jobs, but we didn't do him any favours. We're totally editorial independent, and I noticed that The Guardian, through another reporter, deflected and focused on Malcolm Turnbull, saying that News Corp and Rupert Murdoch, they tear down politicians such as myself and select the prime ministers. He's the real media villain.
Yeah, and it's pretty clear which side he's on, and nothing more to it than that.
In the comments here, Melissa McPhee has said we should have known. Yes, we should have known. And I, during that 2015 leadership spill, which the Liberal Party room voted for Malcolm Turnbull over Tony Abbott, I don't think that many of those 54 Liberal MPs knew that they were voting for a guy who'd brokered the founding of a far left news outlet.
Yeah. It's all the more important to get to push and help develop alternative new media sources, to support those some of the alternative politicians as well, and break free from the two-party system. It's in the end, finding good politicians is hard, maybe impossible, but you can chip away at the edges a little bit and focus on building up your cultural movements and getting out there and doing grassroots nationalist work, and that will help. In the long run, we got to keep it up. And this whole coronavirus business has been a real eye opener for a lot of people, particularly the dangers of globalism and also, you know, the dangers of governments, whether they're left or right wing, you know, how quickly they'll move to take away your freedoms and consolidate power. And we know they don't really let it go. You know, when it all comes down, it will remain to be seen how much they hold on to. But they seem to relish talking about, oh, yeah, we're going to stay in lockdown for indefinitely a year, maybe a year. I saw headlines saying Australia is talking about it being a year.
Third wave, yeah. Because second they say, wave, oh, wave. That's what happened with the Spanish flu.
All your sacrifices will be in vain if you leave lockdown too early and there's another wave, everything will be in vain. So you gotta keep snitching on your neighbors and you gotta stay locked down.
Yeah, you gotta download the app.
So I've been watching Ron Paul. Yes, that wasn't a super chat, but I just had to respond to that. I've watched too much Ron Paul in my life. Not recently, but I don't know if he's been talking about some of the stuff recently. I suspect he has. Ron Paul's very good on this.
Although I know we don't normally do this on this show, but I want to go on a mini tangent there now that you've mentioned Ron Paul. Jeffrey Tucker has...
Anything not coronavirus, go for it.
Jeffrey Tucker, who he started his libertarian career running the Mises.org website, then he became basically the chief SJW libertarian for all the femoid online libertarians, but now he's come back now, Jeffrey Tucker. He's sort of been welcomed back to sort of sane libertarianism.
I've been following because that's actually the one I've been following more. I almost ashamed to confess that, but Jeffrey Tucker is actually the one I've been following the most, just because I thought it was a lot of his having gone for this social justice stuff, I just found interesting. And definitely the last couple of weeks he's been on point, been doing a lot of good stuff that I like and agree with. And maybe just now they're waking up and realizing that the soy doesn't really work, and it's time for real people to stand up and they're seeing the types of people who are pushing back against this. And we've got a lot of that problem here in New Zealand and New Zealand sort of libertarian movement, where they're all super left wing and they're all basically just social justice warriors who understand a little bit of economics. And you're seeing a bit of a shift there as well, I think. The hard times come, and then suddenly they realize that the soft, weak social justice stuff is actually leading to degradation and destruction. In America, you see protests, basically mass protests, especially in Michigan. Both been following those. And they've got thousands of people on the streets protesting it. And they've got the advantage of an actual constitution that says, this is unconstitutional, it's against the law. We technically have that in New Zealand, but there's nobody around to stand up for the Bill of Rights. No, but it's the Bill of Rights is supposed to be worth something, but the problem is it isn't. But we do have it. Officially, we do have a constitutional documents that back up similar freedoms. Not entirely the same, but a couple of them that are being trampled on. But we just don't have anyone left to really push back. But who knows how that can change. I've seen in the past couple of weeks, sometimes the voices come from the unlikely corners, like Jeffrey Tucker. It's quite an interesting pushback, where these Americans are saying, yeah, whatever, you know, let us work. If we want to work, let us work. And that's
because every venturing out, is there's countless risks. I mean, basically the governments are turning into basically the worst OCD person who doesn't leave the house and something bad might happen.
And you're supposed to take reasonable precautions, right? You can say, oh, there's a virus, there's a flu out, there's the plague, the pandemic out there. I'm going to be careful. I'm going to take reasonable precautions. The government implements reasonable precautions, tells people to be reasonable, and the people who don't want to take these precautions, people who want to just go and do whatever and hang out, well, they will probably end up paying the price. We do have a public health, case we're all paying for the public health of our taxes. Okay, cool, be careful it doesn't get overrun. I suggested this a couple of weeks ago. I said, well, whatever, like, we could have just set up army hospitals and just funneled, use the army for it because they're sitting around anyway, and just funnel everybody through to the army hospitals and let them deal with it and
take the chances.
Have
you got all
the
empty beds at the intensive
care?
Yeah, we've
got, the hospitals are empty, everything's empty, ICU, everybody's delaying treatment, especially because where are you going to get the coronavirus? In the hospitals. That's where coronavirus is, in the hospitals.
Exactly.
Well, each hospital only has one or two cases. Yeah. The highest that we've had, one hospital has had three to five cases, seem to have been the highest. Most hospitals only ever have one to two cases at the moment. The GPs are basically shut down. Like we talked about, all of this treatment being delayed. It's an absolute disaster, and hopefully the people who modeled all of this, who made all these predictions, who made all these recommendations, will have to front up and pay for it. It seems unlikely because they've got so much cover, you know, so much cover fire given to them by the media and the lockdown lovies who are somehow think they've been saved from a worst case scenario, which could never have happened. Why? Because people automatically start to react, right? When people see, ooh, this could be bad, they will automatically start taking precautions. People automatically start to do social distancing. People automatically start to avoid riskier behavior on the whole. Because that's what people do. People take risks and people do risk avoidance. That's in their nature for the most part. And for the people who it isn't, well, they tend to not be around for very long. And that's life.
And we've got in the whole of Australia, 66 in intensive care and 201 in hospital right now, nationwide, because of coronavirus.
And we in New Zealand, I mean, again, per capita, we're probably pretty similar. I think we had something like about 20, less than 20 in hospital and less than half a dozen in ICU, something along those lines. I can read out this super chat that we've got here from Origin again, $5 New Zealand. Almost forgot. Zero Hedge was deleted from Twitter for reporting the hashtag Han virus lab connection in February. Don't let it go down the memory hole.
No.
And we talked about this then, and we brought it up again on this show. The lab, it's in the mainstream. It's in the mainstream media now. You know, a month or two later, that hey, there's a lab nearby, and you know, that seems to be the likely place for a virus to come from, especially if it's run by communists.
Yeah, and well, they're never going to give Zero Hedge credit for it because their default position is that it's not an authoritative credentialed source, so it's automatically fake. I mean, people who don't like us, even if we're right and we say stuff they agree with, they will never concede that because they just have this deranged hatred of people like us. I've got a bit of good coronavirus news because
let's finish the show with that.
You mentioned how all the SJW stuff has fallen by the wayside. So there's no more frivolous hate speech complaints. I think the Human Rights Councils, they've just been reduced to saying don't call it the Wuhan or Chinese virus. The New South Wales anti-discrimination complaint against Israel Folau for his sinners Instagram post that was bought by homosexual litigant Gary Burns has been dismissed by the New South Wales Anti-Discrimination Board, which is good.
Yes, very, very good. And the you're talking about the Wuhan was it China virus, and I think the route that I have temporarily.
Amnesty International, they've still got, they shared that graphic saying calling it the Chinese virus is racist.
It's racist, yeah. I think the Epoch Times has it right. They call it the CCP virus, which they've been doing since almost day one, and the Taiwanese sources as well calling it the CCP virus, which is fair enough, right? It is the communist virus, not necessarily.
Or the Qicom virus.
The Qicom, yeah, exactly. It's not China as a whole, or the people of China, or even Wuhan, like the people in Wuhan, or Wuhan itself. That's necessarily responsible. This is clearly a failure of the Chinese Communist Party, and that should be an important focus should never be forgotten, that this is what the CCP did to us. And I think our leaders will be quick to forget it. The ambassador, the Chinese ambassador, was on the radio this morning doing coverage, talking about how great China's response had been, and she wanted some recognition from the New Zealand government that China had acted quickly, and just all of this garbage. And this woman's lucky that she's still allowed to be in the country. I'd be pretty tempted to put her by
your accredited media.
Yeah, exactly. I would be very tempted to put her on the next plane home. If I were running the Foreign Affairs Department, I would be very tempted to put her on the next plane home. It's just it's absolutely disaster.
We shall see if by the time of our next show, whether China they do some more body accounting. And it's like, found like a few more coronavirus deaths.
Yeah, we can do a body count show every week. We just do a CCP body count update video. I'd seen somewhere, which I like, somebody sent the link to me, that the one of the websites that does official body counts for communism has added all of the deaths of the COVID-19 outbreak and attributed it to communism.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
It is strange for a nation that monitors its citizens' every move that they didn't know that 1,500 had died from coronavirus until now.
I think we all know the answer to that question already, Tim. Yes, just a coincidence, I'm sure.
Mm.
All right.
Yeah, so we'll wrap it up now.
Last call for any super chats or anything like that, and we'll do the final show announcements and closing up. And I do hope that we will see all of you next week again. It has been a really good show, and thank you for helping us to be entertained, because we somehow, you know, we have to talk about the same thing week after week, and it's nice to have people give us some distractions and some other fun things to talk about.
Well, we've had. Last week was the High Court Pell decision. That was a big non-coronavirus story. Again, this week, Malcolm Turnbull's memoirs. So we're getting a bit of a corona break, if I may use that term. Well, given that, because I said this last night, the mainstream news is just getting so repetitive now because it's all coronavirus news. And
most of it is stuff that we already knew weeks or months ago, and they're finally getting around to reporting on it.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for watching. I'll be back with Wilms Front 7 p.m. Monday on the Wilms Front channel. Check out the unshackled.net and timwilms.com for my own archive and social links, and for the Unshackled's archives and links.
And you can go through to rightminds.nz for my latest articles. I've been lucky enough, I should say, to keep working and be really busy during this time. So I haven't actually been writing more like I thought I would be. But if I do write stuff, it's on there. You can go to rightminds.nz/donate if you'd like to contribute to keeping the site up and running, or any court related costs. We've got some progress going on. Slowly but surely, we'll see everything. All the courts are suddenly shut during coronavirus.
Yeah, same here as well.
Hence why. Sorry, can't help you anymore.
They don't seem to be wanting to deal with the vexatious matters.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's like, we'll get back to it after the lockdown ends. Oh, when's it going to end? We don't know. Maybe in a year. I've linked this up on the BFD as well. So if you come across from the BFD, thank you for watching. All of my articles go up on the BFD as well, which is New Zealand's largest alt media source in New Zealand. We've got a lot of different personalities there. And we do the show every Friday at 8 p.m. New Zealand time, 6 p.m. Melbourne time. And thank you for watching, and we will see you all next week.
We've got one more super chat.
You want me to do it?
Yeah, well, because I think he's asking you.
Ah, is he? Okay, all right. Well, from Port Film Co-op again, $2 Australian. Can you change the show name to Tim's Wet Mouth? We we're going to have to ban the drinking of... I'm instead going to ban the drinking of water for the next show.
Well, so my wet mouth is much more clean than Wuhan's wet markets.
Oh, that's for sure. But the wet markets are safe. The Communist Party of China has ruled that the wet market's perfectly safe, so you don't have to worry about a thing. Well, I'll see if for the next week's show we can find out if we can get the CC on Tim as well, and see if he's safe.
Yes. That's about it. Oh, well, health organization. Sorry.
Yes, that's right.
Their Ministry of Health.
Send them a letter. All right, everybody, stay safe out there. Stay safe from the government, the Chinese Communist Party virus. And we'll see you next week.
See you, everyone.